This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. 55 years ago, Harper Lee's novel, To Kill a Mockingbird, gave the nation a glimpse of the Deep South.
Macon was a tired old town, even in 1932 when I first knew it. There was no hurry, for there was nowhere to go, nothing to buy, no money to buy it with. Although Macon County had recently been told that it had nothing to fear but fear itself. That summer, I was 6 years old.
That's from the 1962 film adaptation of the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, a beloved classic that is still read in middle and high schools across the country. While the novel went on to sell 40 million copies, Monroeville, Alabama, the town that Macon was based on, quietly faded from the public imagination. With Lee's recently discovered manuscript, Ghost Said a Watchman, being published tomorrow, the writer Paul Theroux went down to Monroeville to see the town where Harper Lee and her friend and collaborator Truman Capote grew up, and which now calls itself the literary capital of Alabama. He wrote about his visit for Smithsonian Magazine. And Paul Theroux, what a pleasure to have you on Word of Mouth.
Well, thank you very much, Virginia. It's delightful to be here.
Well, for many people, To Kill a Mockingbird really forms one of the few images they have of a small town in the Deep South. Is the makeup of To Kill a Mockingbird similar to the Monroeville you visited this year?
I think there's a sort of glow about the makeup of the book. Monroeville is like a lot of towns in the South. They're places that were once industrious. They had business, they had manufacturing, they had cotton or some kind of agriculture, and they've lost it either because of NAFTA or just people leaving. So Monroeville, the Macon of the novel, is rather sad, out of work, and it's sort of a shadow of its former self. You know, after this terrible crime in the book, as it's described, set in the 1930s, there were several other crimes there, you know, racial crimes, which were just as bad. So the book didn't enlighten anyone or cure anyone of their bigotry or the injustice that was going on there.
Well, the town is trying to capitalize on its relationship to the book and the movie and as home to Truman Capote and to Harper Lee, who still does live there. Well, first, what did you learn about these two famous residents from townsfolk who remembered them?
What you find, it's very interesting. This is also true of the South in general, which is that writers in the South tend to make a reputation by leaving the South. There are a couple of exceptions. Flannery O'Connor is an exception. William Faulkner is an exception. There are a few others. But most Southern writers became famous or established themselves as writers by leaving. And when Harper Lee, or Nell, they call her down there, she went to New York City. She wanted to write a novel. She's had a very odd career. Truman Capote the same. They grew up as neighbors. Harper Lee was Truman Capote's defender. He was kind of a whale, wimpy thing, and she was pretty tough. But the town is very proud of them, but the town didn't nurture them and any more than, you know, other towns in the South nurtured their writers. They come to New York, they go to Boston, go to New Hampshire, for that matter, and the Southern writer makes a reputation. Barry Hannah, who's a Southern writer from Mississippi, said that he got most of his writing done by living in Vermont in the snow. So the fact that the book is set there and Ghost Set a Watchman is set in Monroeville means that people go there on literary pilgrimages and they look for the remnants of the town. And actually, because the town is so poor, the remnants of the town still exist. There's still the courthouse, still the stores, there's still the old, you know, hardware store, the old jail, the black part of town, the wealthy white part of town, the golf course, and two dozen churches, you know, literally 24 churches that are all bustling and busy on Sunday. So no one's disappointed when they go to Monroeville. They see it and they say, this is just what I was expecting to find.
But yet some of the residents that you spoke to kind of rolled their eyes when the novel was mentioned. Why?
Black residents roll their eyes because they say very little has changed. White residents don't roll their eyes. They're kind of pleased and proud. Black residents have had a tough time there. They're still somewhat sidelined, and their story hasn't been told. And certainly, Harper Lee didn't tell their story. After she wrote that book, she didn't write anything else. hers is one of the oddest literary careers in the books. So she wrote the book. She's got those two books, the old one that's coming out now and To Kill a Mockingbird. And then she just, you know, she was only in her 30s, and she just stopped. She was making a ton of money, but, I mean, she didn't do what I was doing, which is, you know, go to a place and write about it and write for a magazine. And I've written, you know, with no boast, but I've written about 50 books in my life. So she hasn't done that. Nothing against her. It's just something I don't understand and would like to understand. But no one can ask her. No one talks to her. She doesn't give interviews. So we'll never know the reason.
Well, the book, of course, was set in the 1930s in the Jim Crow South. You met a number of people who remembered living there at that time. And you just alluded to that's not officially segregated today, but there are some pretty distinct color lines for the people of Monroeville. Where do those begin and end?
People have long memories there, and there's memories of where people live and where they don't live. Actually, the color line isn't strict in Monroe. You know, the traditionally white part of town has plenty of black residents. The black part of town doesn't have any white residents. Where you find segregation in the South is in churches, barbershops, and funeral parlors. You never find a white person in a black funeral parlor or a white person in a black barbershop or vice versa. But it's not so much the segregation because people tend to self-segregate. The odd thing was how little had changed in terms of justice. In the 1980s, there was a miscarriage of justice that was just like To Kill a Mockingbird, where a man who was completely innocent, black man, was found guilty of killing a white woman, and he was put on death row. And he was gone off on an innocence project. There was no evidence to support it. But this was in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the book by then had been a long bestseller, and people thought, oh, well, everything's fine. But one of the curious things about the South is that things aren't fine, and I think you notice that, this controversy about the Confederate flag.
Right.
If you go to Selma, for example, Selma is a wonderful example of voters' rights and the will of people. But if you go to Selma today, you'll see a place that really there's no work, it's very sad, businesses are closed, and it's a symbol of something, but there's not a lot happening. The South may not rise again, but the South is a very sad and bewildered place.
We're talking with the writer and novelist Paul Theroux about his visit to Monroeville, Alabama. That's the town fictionalized as Macomb in Harper Lee's famous novel, To Kill a Mockingbird, and the new novel, Go Set a Watchman, which is coming out tomorrow. Well, you make the point that the kind of dramatic weirdness that has traditionally been played up in the Southern fiction of Faulkner or Flannery O'Connor or Erskine Caldwell. And even today's fiction looks backwards rather than the aspects of contemporary Southern life. Well, what's going on there?
I think that what it is, it's sort of indirection. It's people satirizing themselves by exaggerating the freakishness of their society and not looking at the ordinary facts of the society, the realities of it. The realities are really almost too sad to contemplate. So it's made into a kind of carnival, kind of freak show, a sort of circus, and with grotesque characters. And that's the way Southern fiction has sort of managed. And this is also why, if you go from New Hampshire to Mississippi, you'll find something that you hadn't expected to find. The Mississippi and Alabama that's described in the book doesn't exist. You go there and you'd find a completely different place, a more interesting place, a sadder place, but a less highly colored place. Mainly, you find places that are out of work. There's no work. And when people don't have any work, when they have no money, when they're entirely dependent on government handouts, welfare, or living, you know, poorly, they're living a completely different kind of life. It's not colorful. It's just rather sad.
But even under this long shadow of racial injustice and places that you're describing as being completely left behind economically, the Deep South, it's still a draw for those nostalgic for, you know, the sleepy Southern towns where the humidity is thick and the tea is sweet. Are these the sort of paradoxes maybe unique to the South?
Yes, I feel as if I've been negative talking to you. The South has so many virtues. people really are friendly, black and white, very friendly, friendly to strangers, friendly to each other. There's no question about that. They have a sense of the past. They have a strong sense of their history. They have a lot of pride in their culture, in their cooking, in the way of speaking. So much has been taken from them, and they feel very belittled and mocked. They feel they've lost everything. They lost the Civil War. The Civil Rights Movement was a kind of war. People are trying to take things away from them. Now, you know, rightly or wrongly, they want to take guns away. They want to take the flag away. They want to take, you know, the memory of their struggle away. So I'm not saying that they are right, but you can kind of identify with their sense of feeling weakened by outside forces, mm-hmm. just the way they did through history. But the federal government, Washington's trying to tell them what to do. And it's not that they all want to be slave owners. They want their identity. And I'm speaking of both of blacks and whites, that the Southern identity really cuts across that.
Well, one of the many characters that you write about and meet in your trip, Sam Williams, he was once a traveling lingerie salesman, and he urged you, talk nice about Monroeville. What would he think of your portrait of that town?
I was so struck by this man. I was asking him questions about the past, about the trial, about the book. His business had closed. This man was a traveling salesman for a lingerie manufacturer that at its peak hired or employed 2,500 people in Monroeville. Uh-huh. Now it's gone, and those 2,500 people are unemployed. Then he became conscious of the fact that he was being kind of downbeat, and then he said to me, when you leave, talk nice about us. Don't run us down. And I don't, you know, I don't want to run them down. I don't think that they did it to themselves. The South in general lost its industry because of companies leaving. They went to Mexico, they went to China, they went to India, they went to Vietnam. They left them, and they left the people unemployed. You know, agriculture became mechanized. So there's mass unemployment, and that's not a great thing. It's really hurt the South, and they feel damaged as a result.
How about this new book, Go Set a Watchman? Are you looking forward to reading it?
I'm looking forward to reading it, but I don't have high hopes. You may have gathered from what I wrote in Smithsonian that I'm not a great fan of To Kill a Mockingbird. I think that Flannery O'Connor is right. It's a child's book. It's an oversimple book. And the writing is very odd. It's really, it reads very much like an early effort at writing. If you write for a long time, over a period of time, I mean, I'm way past retirement age. I've written, you know, every day of my life I write something. Your writing does change and it improves. But Harper Lee's writing is frozen in time, and her views are frozen in time. So I don't have high hopes, but as an artifact, as a piece of history, I'm very, very curious to read it.
Well, Paul Theroux, a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Virginia. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Paul Theroux is a journalist, travel writer, and novelist. His upcoming book is called Deep South, Four Seasons on Back Roads. And you can find a link to read his article, What's Changed and What Hasn't in the Town That Inspired To Kill a Mockingbird. It's in Smithsonian Magazine. The link is at wordofmouthradio.org. Also, details there for today's live reading at Gibson's Bookstore in Concord of the entire novel of To Kill a Mockingbird. My colleague Brady Carlson and I will be among those scheduled to read from the book. You can find details, again, at wordofmouthradio.org.